Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Could there be a cooler story than that of a man whose childhood dream to build a jetpack came true? Well, that is what Glenn Martin of Christchurch has achieved. His secret project was unveiled last year, a jetpack that could take a 100-kilo person for a half-hour ride. Since the unveiling, he's been on a media roller coaster. Simon Pound spoke to him to find out how everything just kind of took off.
What a cool thing to be involved with. What led to your interest in jetpacks?
Well, I mean, I tell several lies, you know, that I'm amazingly interested in aviation and that, you know, I came up with this idea when I was 21. But actually the truth is that I was a five-year-old being walked to school by my big sister and I found the crossing at between Waikare Road and Helensburgh Road in Dunedin far too scary. That all these cars were rushing down. In my five-year-old mind, I thought it would be far easier to fly across the road than walk across the zebra crossing. And that, I suppose, sort of, you know, started the idea. I'd been watching as a kid, you know, Thunderbirds and things like that, and watching the space program. I remember sitting in class and listening to Neil Armstrong step onto the moon. And I suppose, you know, that started the idea. But then I put it away like you do as you grow up. You know, I put away the idea and into the silly basket. And then it was when I was 21 and at Otago University, it sort of came up in a conversation over a beer, actually, as these things often do. And it was pre-internet days, so I realised that I had access to the university library system and I could actually start doing some research on it. I'd been, you know, spent a couple of years at university being taught how to research things and started looking into it. And then the whole thing sort of took off from there, if you pardon the pun.
So what did you have to actually learn? What were the steps along the way?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a lot of things I had to learn. I passed school cert maths and did okay and went on to university, but maths was never my strong subject. I had to relearn algebra and aerodynamics, and when I was in a flat in Dunedin, I was probably spending 50% of my time studying biochemistry, which was what my major was, and most of the rest of the time, you know, I think some people have an image of students, you know, drinking all the time, but the truth is we don't have enough money to do that, so we have to study as well. So I spent a lot of time in the library studying algebra and studying aerodynamics and figuring out why the one that everybody's all seen on TV, the Bell rocket belt that had been on James Bond, that why it was never really a practical jetpack. It could only ever fly for, I think the longest flight they got out of the Bell was about 26 seconds. Now, after 60 years of more development work, they're up to 33 seconds, you know. And the other thing about that is that all the pilots weighed around 70 kilograms or less. I weigh 100 kilos, so it was, even if I had a Bell rocket belt now, it would never get me off the ground. So I decided to see if it was possible to develop something that could lift a real person and fly for a real amount of time. And so I set the goal at, you know, my body weight for obvious reasons. And you know, around 30 minutes seemed to me like a reasonable time to buzz around in the sky and have fun.
Is one of those obvious reasons the difficulty of finding anyone else who would test pilot such a contraption?
Well, there was that, but I, you know, fortunately, along the process, I got married, and my wife, I think it was prototype 8, by the time I got up to prototype 8, I was ready for a person to get off the ground. It wasn't actually strong enough for me, but she weighed 53 kilos, and so I used her as a guinea pig. She was, you know, 6 weeks after having given birth to our second son, and she strapped into the thing and did the first flight. So since then, it's, you know, it's grown and grown, and obviously now I can fly, which is a great relief. I'm short of Vanessa, but
she sounds like an excellent sport. I mean, how did you secure funding for all of this kind of work along the way?
Yeah, well, I mean, the classic thing is, you know, you fund these things yourself. I made the choice that I wanted to do this when I was still at university, and I realised that the inventors usually fall over in the sales and marketing side of things. And I thought, well, what do I do with a biochemistry degree to learn about business? And I went into the pharmaceutical industry and did quite well there and managed to save up some money. And then gave up my day job. I'd learnt something about business, which was great, and sales and marketing, which was great, and saved some money. And then I spent 2 years spending that money and building prototypes, and then I had to go back and get a day job again. And eventually we got to the point where we had a video with Vanessa and I getting off the ground, and it sort of proved the concept. I mean, it's one thing to go to a group of investors and say, look, you know, I've got a whole stack of equations 3 feet high that have been checked by the local university, and they say this is possible. And it's another thing to go and actually show them a video of the thing taking off and leaving the ground. So as soon as we had the video, it got a lot easier to have funding. So I started selling shares to friends and associates, people, mainly engineers, that have come and helped me along the way and said, you know, if you ever want to sell some shares, you know, I'm interested. And I called their bluff in the end. And then eventually we got the interest of Number 8 Ventures out of Wellington, which is, you know, arguably New Zealand's premier high-tech venture capital firm. And that's sort of what a venture capital firm does, is they invest in technology they think that's going to be, you know, stellar and world-changing. And they go through this due diligence process where they, you know, again, checked all their equations and such forth and looked at the potential market and said, yeah, we think there's something here. And they've been a great supporter for many years, and that's been the majority of the funding, I suppose, for the last 4 or 5 years.
Now, you really broke through into the public consciousness last year, didn't you?
Yeah.
Tell me about the media journey you had once you kind of had launched your amazing
Well,
product.
I mean, you know, you watch on TV and you see people in the media and you feel a little bit sorry for them, but that's their industry. I deliberately went to a typical Kiwi thing, you know, we underrate ourselves, and I deliberately went to the world's biggest air show because I thought that jetpacks, you know, would be a small niche mark of the aviation industry, and that I would have to go to somewhere where there's 750,000 people who are an aviation enthusiast to get any interest. Overdid it, of course, and typically, you know, went along there and as a Kiwi does, and showed the thing, and within 24 hours we were on 670 TV news programs around the world. My whole family and I were being interviewed. It could have been 24 hours a day, but we restricted ourselves to 20 hours a day. We did hundreds of interviews. At one point there, I was being interviewed on one TV station, and my wife was being interviewed on another, and my son, who did that flight at the air show, was being interviewed on another, and my 11-year-old son was doing a radio interview. So the whole thing went absolutely crazy. The people who did our website also had done Team New Zealand's America's Cup website, and we started off with the same bandwidth that they had, and it crashed, and they doubled it, and it crashed, and they doubled it, and it crashed, and this went on for about 3 days, you know, until we got enough bandwidth to get the number of hits that we're hitting in our website. So the whole thing went pretty crazy. We got invitations to the Jay Leno program and the David Letterman program, but in the end we turned them all down. We were a little bit too tired, but we did, on the way back through LA, stop in and see Jay Leno, and he was, you know, very accommodating and showed us around the studio and sort of invited us to come back one day with the jetpack and put it on his program. So from suddenly going from a 27-year secret project to having, you know, the whole world's media phoning you and literally it happened in an hour was a bit of a shock, to tell you the truth, and it was pretty hard to handle. But I think, you know, I've tried to not let it go to my head. Other people could comment about whether it has, but yeah, it's been an amazing sort of 9 months since then, you know.
And so what's happened with the further developments for the jetpack? Because, I mean, you have reached that goal, haven't you, of being able to fly a 100-kilogram person for half an hour, and so I imagine that military must be interested.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, I suppose, in my naive view was that we would go to Oshkosh and we'd sell a few and then go back the next year and sell a few more. And what actually happened was we had, you know, hundreds, well, we had about 15,000 people through our tent, but we had, you know, hundreds of people come up with business suggestions, and there were so many of them, we've had to sort of put them into about 6 major categories. And there are, you know, we had the Marines come and suss us out, the US Air Force sent a team of engineers up from the Pentagon to go and investigate us, whether they were investigating us to find out how great it would be in the US Air Force or figuring out how to shoot the thing down, I'm not too sure. But yeah, we've had so many approaches from so many people that we just haven't had the resources to cope with them. So we've managed to convince a lifelong friend of mine, Richard Lauder, who's what I call a serial CEO. He's been a very successful CEO in a number of firms around New Zealand, and he's come in to help out with the management side of thing. And he's spent the last few months going through some of those business opportunities and saying, well, you know, we can't do all of them. Which ones are we going to do first? Which ones, and what order are we going to do them? And then the big question that comes up to that is, you know, how much money do we need to do each of these? So I'm still pretty much developing the technology, and he's working on the business side of things. And you know, part of his job description is to go out there and find some funding or investors to enable some of these business opportunities to come off.
Well, as one last thing there, you know, is it likely ever to be something where you can have your own jetpack?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look back, 20 or 30 years when I was a lad, you know, nobody had jet skis. Nobody had cell phones, and nobody had personal computers. My 11-year-old son picked up an old copy of Get Smart the other day, and he was marvelling over the shoe phone. And you know, some of these things that were science fiction, you know, most of those things have now become science fact. And I suppose, you know, in some ways, the jetpack has been one of those last holy grails that we have from the future that is now a reality. I mean, I'm here in the office today. The guys are out flying today, and you know, they'll come back with some video of people strapping into jetpacks and flying around. And to us, you know, at Martin Aircraft, that's become pretty commonplace. To everybody else, it's still pretty exciting to see it. But in 20 years' time, yeah, I think there'll be people you won't bother looking up, you know, when you see a jetpack flying by or whatever.
Simon Pound talking to Glenn Martin there. If you'd like to see the frankly amazing jetpack in action, head along to martinjetpack.com and check out the video section. After the break, Bill Gosden and Julian Dine of the Open Souls.